This is episode 10, Trash Talking with Eco Warriors.
You're tuning in to Trash Talking with Eco Warriors, where women share inspiring stories about their careers in green business, sustainability, and conservation. Here's your host and founder of Trashy Beauty, Barbara Lee.
Hey, Eco Warriors, near and far, happy holidays, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, whatever it is that you celebrate. I'm up in Boston and we're expecting snow, making this one very special white Christmas indeed. Last week, Trash Talking with Eco Warriors hit number 6 in its category on iTunes. We could not be more grateful for all of your support. Thank you to everyone who listens in from Nepal to the UK, especially during the holidays. Maybe you're taking a break from cooking, eating, or your relatives. Whatever it is, we couldn't do it without you, so thank you, everyone. Chances are, sometime between Thanksgiving and New Year's, you'll be enjoying a bottle of my favorite adult beverage, wine. Today's episode features Berlin Crystal Kelly, the founder of Proud Pour, a wine company that is helping to make the planet better with every drop. In the US, $24 billion is spent at bars and nightclubs every year. Berlin's idea was to tap into this market and use wine sales to help preserve keystone species like oysters in the New York Harbor and, in turn, the planet. Every bottle of Sauvignon Blanc funds the restoration of 100 wild oysters, and every bottle of Pinot Noir plants 875 wildflowers, providing 90 square feet of natural habitat for wild bees. Not to mention, the wine is pretty delicious. It's also vegan and, of course, sustainably made. It's so funny. After my conversation with Berlin, I wasn't sure what I was going to say for her intro. Proud Pour has only been around for 3.5 years now, and they've steadily made their way into the market, but they have by no means made it. Berlin doesn't take a salary even, and her business partner makes $45,000 a year. But Berlin is determined to continue this business, and she says that she knows there will be a moment when someone will discover them and the business can scale. Not only that, she really dives into how she feels about facing the anxieties of what she should be doing with her life. She talks about her background working in finance in New York City and how she made this pivot to moving to Portland. And it's just a really incredible story to hear. So let's get trash talking.
Awesome. Well, Berlin, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And I guess tell us a little bit about what it is that you do.
I mean, I do a lot of things. The main thing that I'm focused on right now, have been for the last 3 years, is launching and expanding a company that I call Proud Pour. The idea behind this was I was living in New York City, and I was working, you know, a finance job, long hours, meeting friends for drinks after work, and, you know, buying Warby Parker and Tom's Shoes and kind of all the social mission-based companies. But idea was, you know, if I'm working finance and I don't have time to be involved, you know, volunteering in things or, you know, joining the Peace Corps or going out wherever, like I've chosen this path of finance and Wall Street. So if I've chosen that path, I'd like to be able to support, you know, ways to make the world a better place in my purchases. And I found that there was like literally no companies in the alcohol industry doing anything, like no social mission-based companies in the alcohol industry. And I just thought that was really weird that there were so many in the apparel industry and fashion industry, but nothing in the alcohol industry, which is what I had spent most of my time and money, you know, outside of work. And so I launched this company called Proud Pour, and we started with rebuilding oyster reefs in New York Harbor. So for every bottle of a Sauvignon Blanc, we would restore 100 oysters to New York Harbor. And then Pinot Noir we just launched to save bees. So every bottle of that plants 875 wildflowers.
Wow, that's amazing. And can you, like, tell us a little bit more about, like, why bees, why oysters?
Yeah, I mean, they're just a starting place, right? Like, we plan to also do a whiskey for wolves and a pilsner for sea turtles and a tequila for bats and all these other things. Start with oysters because I wanted something that was local and tangible. You know, I didn't want it to be like climate change, we're fighting that. So, like, okay, great, but, like, how and what exact would this one bottle do if I consumed it, you know? What
sure.
For me, I feel like there's so much, I guess the term is greenwashing, mm-hmm. of companies claiming that they're doing all these great things, but it's not super clear what they're doing. and how they're doing it. So, and then also like why it matters. And so with oysters, that was such an easy one once I discovered that there was a problem with oysters. It was really funny because like I was trying to think of a wine to pair with something. And then I was like, maybe there's a problem with oysters. And like I could use a wine to pair with oysters. And so I just like Googled like problems with oysters. And then something came up like, oh, don't eat oysters if it's like in the warm waters, you have to be worried about, like, you know, them being toxic or whatever. And then we're like, no, I mean, like, problems with, like, oysters environmentally. And it turns out, like, huge problem, local problem, fixable problem. And I was like, oh, my God, this is it. Like, this is what I've been looking for. So oysters, we've lost 95% of our oyster reefs across America. And New York Harbor used to have more oysters than anywhere else in the world. There's 220,000 acres of oyster reefs right in New York Harbor, and we've lost all of them because we over-harvested them. And these oysters are also reefs, their habitats for thousands of species. And just one oyster cleans 30 gallons of water per day. So they're, like, hugely important and awesome. And it's fixable. People are now restoring them, which is great. It took a really long time after the Clean Water Act for the water to become clean enough that they wouldn't die instantly. So we can actually solve this problem. So it's kind of our big moment, and we're doing it. So.
Wow, that's pretty cool. How did you find those things? Like, how did you start the wine? Like, where did the wine come from? Like, tell us a little bit more details about, like, how you actually figured out doing.
I was really active in the New York City Homebrewers Guild. It's just a group that meets once a month at Burp Castle on 7th Street in the East Village. And I got into homebrewing. So I was homebrewing beer, mead, wine, cider, kombucha, pretty much anything fermentable in my tiny West Village apartment. I just had, like, fermenting vessels everywhere. And I had friends starting breweries and cideries and wine brands. And with wine, it's, like, pretty easy to get started. As a wine brand, you can just literally buy Shiners, which is, like, just bottled wine without a label, and throw a label on, and then, like, sell it to a distributor, who then sells it to a retailer. Like, so it's really, it's, like, pretty easy. And so I was, like, for, like, buying a facility and investing $1 million into this concept that who knows if people are even going to, like, respond to it, why don't I just buy one pallet of Shiners, sell that pallet, kind of see, you know, do some tastings and see if this concept will take hold. You know, it's a generic Sauvignon Blanc, like, nothing too extraordinary. It was more just, like, will people like this idea of drinking for a cause? Or will they kind of be like, eh, I'll just drink what I want to drink? Or how much is this going to influence people's buying decisions? So I was able to do that pretty easily. And then after, you know, a palette, I was like, okay, this, like, this is going to work. So let's go out to wine country. I had some friends that had wine brands that kind of helped me make initial connections, connected with some winemakers and vineyards, and visited their spots and was looking for a vineyard that was really focused on sustainability. And so did all that. Yeah. And then just, like, kind of have gotten, like, progressively more involved.
You studied finance in school. You were working at a finance company. And then you were like, I'm just going to go out there and start selling wine.
Yeah, which I thought, like, because I had invested and kind of, like, did some real estate, just, like, flipping places and, like, managing and owning real estate, I thought, like, oh, like, if I could do that and if I could work on Wall Street, like, I could totally move some wine. Like, how hard that could that be? And it turns out very hard, like, super difficult, like, the hardest thing I've ever done because it's so particular. You're competing against a $1 billion industry with brands that are investing millions into marketing and advertising and tastings and displays and all this stuff. And for me, I'm a pretty, like, simple person. I don't like a lot of junk. I don't like to create a lot of junk. I don't like swag. I don't like, you know, all of this stuff. Like, I want to help the planet, and, like, swag does not help the planet. Like, the planet does not need us having marketing stuff everywhere. Like, that's just not necessary.
Right.
It's necessary for the industry. So, like, sometimes I'm like, I don't know, like, is this really what Mother Earth wants me to be doing right now? Or should I just go, like, you know, be a kayaktivist, sit in the kayak in front of oil rigs? Like, I'm not entirely sure. But, like, that being said, like, there are people who are going to drink wine. So if they're going to be drinking wine, it should be art.
And then I guess tell us a little bit about the Wildflower Project.
Yeah. So that's the Pinot Noir, and we use the sales of that to help bees. And, you know, there's a lot of ways. One of the easiest things we can do is plant wildflowers. Wildflowers are food for bees, and they also create a habitat for bees. And so every bottle of our Pinot Noir, we plant 875 wildflowers at local farms. So depending on where you buy it, it's going to the to a local farm in that state. And then we plant 875 wildflowers, which also gives bees not only food, but 90 square feet of habitat for them to have a home. And bees, and a lot of people are like, oh yeah, the honeybees are really in trouble. And it's like, yeah, but the wild bees are facing extinction. Like honeybees are a domesticated animal, essentially, like a cow. Like they're not going to go extinct. They might have mad cow disease, you know, or something like that, which is a really big problem, but they're not facing extinction. Wild bees, nobody owns them. They're not domesticated. They don't live in hives. They're often solitary and stingless and live underground, and their habitat's being destroyed daily by development. So that's what we're focused on, wild bee population.
Gus, how did you find those partnerships?
So we got really lucky. With the oysters, you know, my business partner, Brian, he has an environmental background. He went to Brown for environmental studies. He works on developing all those partnerships. So with the oysters, it's been more complicated because we have different projects all over. With the farms, we actually work with Circes, which is a Portland-based pollinator organization, and they have the connection. So they have a waiting list of farms who want pollinator strips. So it's like really easy. The farms go to them, and then we help fund that.
That's awesome. And how do you kind of like figure out which are going to be the farms that are going to have like the most impact? Like, is that something that you think about? How long will that wildflower patch sit there? Like, is it on land that's protected?
Farmers reach out because they're like, we want wildflowers here because they understand the importance of bees, like for their other fruits. Like, it's designated areas that are for wildflowers. I think the idea that they stay there, like they're part of the farm, so that the farmer can continue their work and have the bees pollinate their food, and it has monetary value.
Tell us a little bit about like how you became so passionate about nature. Like, was it a moment that you had when you were younger, or was it something that occurred when you were older? Like, what was the moment that you realized that you were so passionate about nature and wanting to help protect the planet?
Well, it's so funny because I've been asked this before, and I'm like, well, I don't know. Like, doesn't everyone care about the planet? Like, who doesn't? I mean, it's what feeds us and gives us life and air. Like, if we don't have air or water, we can't survive. I mean, I grew up an only child with a single mom who worked all the time, and I didn't have, like, neighbors or cousins to hang out with or siblings. And so it was just kind of, like, during summer breaks, it was just me, like, outside living in California, like, playing outside, picking lemons and making lemonade. And it's beautiful. I mean, the most stunning pictures in the world are not of a person or something created. It's nature, right? Like nobody gets their breath taken away by like ceramics or something, you know. It's like, yeah, it's pretty, but like nothing breathtaking.
Have you had like an inspiring moment though that you can like remember in particular?
I worked on a biodynamic farm in California and woke up to literally the birds and the bees. Like I could hear the bees humming about, and then I would go like say hi to the chickens and make sure that they fed each one by hand, and then, like, go pick some apples and walnuts that I would then, like, deshell and take to the farmer's market and, you know, come back and, like, help press grapes and have wine that night. And, like, to me, that's what life should be about. I think that, for me, I'm just, like, afraid that if I leave the system, the institutionalized system that we're all a part of, that I won't, like, make an influence. But then, like, I feel so at home when I am on farms. Like, I've done a lot of woofing. I think it stands for the Worldwide Organization of Organic Farms. You work on farms with farmers, and I've done a lot of that. And when I'm not, like, when I'm there, like, a lot of my worries, my codependency issues, or a lot of that stuff, you know, that I just experience is it. Human in a city, they're not there anymore. And I'm like, oh yeah, I'm holding soil. Like, it's awesome. I just feel like I should be doing a lot more of that than I am.
Can you tell us a little bit more about like some of the things that you've had to overcome in starting your business and pursuing this career path that you're on?
I think it's like, so it was funny actually. I was at a co-op, the best co-op in the world in Portland. It just happens to be like a few blocks from my house, which is incredible. It's called People's Co-op, and it's this tiny co-op, and it's been there for like 50 years, and it's amazing and beautiful, and it's like the most authentic. And they have everything in bulk, like honey and vinegar and miso and like all these like handcrafted local fermented bulk items of anything you can imagine. Everyone who works there is like just such a perfect co-op person. Anyway, so I'm there, and I'm putting wildflowers on the bottles of Pinot because that's something that we're doing now to kind of help get people's attention. And so I was doing that, and the lady was like, oh, is this your company? And I was like, oh, yeah, I started it to, you know, like help different keystone species, ecosystem engineers like bees and oysters. And she was like, oh, but essentially you're in marketing. And I was like, yeah, you're right. Like, essentially, that is what I am in. Like, when I first started this company, I was like, this is going to be great. I'm going to quit my job. I'm going to sell my condo in Santa Monica and I basically sell my home and launch this company, and I'm going to, like, be out there on the vineyard all the time and out there with the Oyster Project all the time, and, you know, people are going to buy wine. It's going to be awesome, right? I started it, and I'm like, oh, I don't get to do any of that. Like, that is free time. That is vacation for me. That is not what I get to do with my job. What my job is marketing,
right?
Legal, logistic, operations, finance. 70% of what I do is marketing, which is so crazy because, like, it's just an oversaturated industry. So that's really tough because I'm not a big talker. I don't really like to pitch things on people. I kind of want people to be able to make their own decisions and give them information. But I'm, like, talking with my intern today about, like, how many likes we need to do to get a certain amount of followers so we can increase our bandwidth so we can get a distributor in this other state. So it feels like it's a constant popularity contest, and I've never been into that. Like, I've never been interested in playing that game. It just feels really empty and really superficial. And unfortunately, with a brand, it seems like that's kind of required thing. So that's been really tough for me to get past emotionally, just the fact that, like, I'd really wondered, like, is this really the way I want to be?
Have you had a big, like, win or, like, a really inspirational moment that you can share through this recent project, Parkour?
So I talked to Brian about this, too, and we're all like, when is the big moment going to be? When are we going to... When is it going to happen? It's going to happen. You know, like, New York Times is going to find out about us and be like, oh, and, like, see how important it is. Like, and now, like, instead of spending $11 million a night on alcohol that doesn't do anything, you have an opportunity, which is what New York does. New York spends $11 million per night on alcohol, which is, and, like, Boston Metro is $7.5 million per night on alcohol, which is actually more than four times the amount that Boston spends on reading materials. So, like, clearly, some things are a little off, I guess. But, like, there's this big moment that's going to happen where we're going to be on some show, some influencer is going to do something, and it hasn't happened. Like, it might happen. We're changing our labels pretty significantly, and I think that will finally, like, get the message across. But yeah, I kind of just feel like sometimes businesses have this big break. You know, they have this, like, this breakthrough moment where, like, all of a sudden they're successful. But I also think more often, there's just businesses that stick around for a really long time. It's like slow and steady. And I kind of feel like that's been proud for. You know, Threehold. It's this amazing, cool restaurant in Brooklyn that I lived a block from for a year. And I would go there like four times a week. And I tried to be like, hey, like, you guys have Oyster Mondays. Like, you should totally try our wine. And they're like, no, we're not interested. Like, we don't, like, we look for the wines that we want. We don't have wines come to us. We'll take what we like. Like, don't bother us. And so I'm like, okay. I was hanging out with this other girl who worked in another restaurant that actually did sell our wines. This one night, like, out with just, like, the owner of the place, and we're all hanging out. And we kind of, like, became friends. Like, just a few weeks ago, this is, like, you know, a year or more later, a few weeks ago, this girl texts me, and she's like, hey, Berlin, I don't know if you're free at all. The owner of Freehold is, like, heard of you, and he wants to bring in your wine. Like, are you interested? I'm like, yeah. Like, are you kidding me? Of course I'm interested. That's like being like, hey, the hottest guy in school wants to take you out. Like, do you want to go? Like, yes, please.
Yeah.
And so.
That's pretty cool.
But it's just, like, yeah, like, things like that happen all the time. We didn't try to get their attention, but the industry is, like, it's, like, so fickle that they kind of need to discover you. So it's kind of like, can you just hang out long enough for, like, the people who you've been trying to get the attention of discover you on their own?
Sure, I don't know. Yeah. How long have you been doing it?
Like 3.5 years.
And do you feel like you've kind of reached a point where, like, are you happy with where the project's gone?
I don't like pushing things. So it's just, like, that's just not my nature. And so, you know, before Brian came on board, like, I would pitch the wine, and if it wasn't 100% success rate, which, of course, it wasn't, I thought, okay, I need to improve the product. I need to improve the packaging. I need to improve the website. So I'd go back and I'd keep working on it. That's not really, I guess, how to do sales in this industry. Like, most people are going to say no, and you just kind of have to find the, like, 5% that will say yes. We kind of pushed through and then kind of found that, like, we're making progress, but it's, you know, we have to go through a lot of wine. Like, our margins are so with having, you know, organic wine, vegan made, and restoring 100 oysters per bottle or planting 800 wildflowers per bottle. Like, our margins aren't that big to just sell 2,000 bottles a year. Like, we have to be selling 100,000 bottles a year so that we can afford our salaries. I mean, like, Brian makes $45,000 a year. I don't take a salary. To go through a lot. And so kind of we're looking at this and, like, we've got a change of our label. People are missing our message. Nobody is hearing what we're doing. This is the problem. So one thing that we decided was we're going to put shells on every single bottle of wine. People really love the shells on the Sauvignon Blanc, and they will buy the wine just for the shells. So, like, we've kind of been back and forth on that, and I was living in Brooklyn. It was, like, impossible for me to collect and put them on every bottle. Like, just, I was, like, cleaning the shells in the bathtub. Like, my roommates were like, man, it really smells Berlin. I'm like, I know, I'm sorry. Like, it was a little bit absurd that I was, like, doing this in my apartment. My roommates were always super nice about it, but, like, I can't go through a shelf for every bottle in my apartment. So once I moved to Portland, like, rent is so cheap here. So I was able to find a studio for $175 a month that I could, like, process the shells out of. And now we went to an event in Seattle where they can't use the shells, but usually you can use oyster shells for restoration. So this event in Washington, you're not allowed to. So we were able to collect about 20,000 oyster shells from this event and have them curing at my friend's dad's, like, house on a river. So it's just, like, underneath the sun and just, like, curing. So that's awesome. So now we're able to put shells on every bottle. And then we also decided to add wildflowers to every bottle of the Pinot are gorgeous. I think it's, like, so beautiful. You can see some pictures on our Instagram, which is at Proud Pour. And then we're changing up the label pretty significantly. So Brian and I were talking, and we're like, if this doesn't work, we know nothing about human nature. Like, we do not understand humanity at all, because, like, this is the best we've got. And, like, if this isn't enough to, like, bring us to this new level of sales, you know, of course, like, we're not going to expect, like, instant turnaround, but, like, if we don't see a serious uptick in velocity, we're just going to have to, like, maintain the company and understand that it's going to be a small company. You know, it's going to be Ryan working. I'll work on other things. I'll help, like, kind of manage the process, but tough industry. I have about 6 girlfriends who have started different types of wine companies, whether it's boxed wine or canned wine. If we're girls in the industry, we kind of find each other, and there's only 2 of us left, and we're all super, like, hardworking, passionate New York City women who've left high-powered jobs to start. You know, it's not like we're just, like,
that's so cool,
dreaming up in our garage. Like, these are all really incredible women, and it's just down to me and another. So it's just a tough industry.
No, for sure. Absolutely. I don't know, like, who some of your role models are, or where do you get your information about what's going on in the world? Like, are you reading that through articles? Is there a podcast that you love?
I mean, well, podcast, I love, like, How I Built This. I think that's a really fun podcast with Guy Raz. That's what I listen to the daily to get news. I'm not advocating it. It's just what I'm listening to now. Scott Harrison, he started the company Charity Water. I really love what he's done. He's kind of like, why do nonprofits need to have crappy designs? You could have really good design and be a nonprofit and be really, like, clear about what you're spending your money on. So 100% of donations, if it comes from an individual, goes towards these projects. And then he's very clear about that project, like, how many days of water or how long of, like, how much water, how much money is going to bring to somebody. So it's very clear what your money is doing. I also think Blake Mikowski is really, really just genuine. He's the founder of Tom's.
What are things that inspire you to continue your work? Because you've mentioned this, that it can be difficult, and it can be, you said this is the most difficult thing you do. So what kind of inspires you to keep going?
I think if the honest answer is, like, I'm already really invested. Like, it's not so hard that I can't keep going. I don't know. Like, I mean, I think it's like, if you get married to somebody and you have a hard relationship, what inspires you? Like, well, I've already spent 15 years with this person, so might as well just keep going along and, like, ride the ups and downs. Like, it's kind of, I think it's part of life and it's part of anything, is, like, having challenges and having successes. Like, it's always going to be there. So, I don't know. Plus, I think, like, somebody needs to do it. Like, I need to get the numbers right. But I'm pretty sure it was $65 million a night is spent on wine. And that's a lot of money.
A lot of drinking.
And somebody should be doing something to help the planet, right? Like, we're not in great shape. So, restoring the oysters is not our main goal. Our main goal is connecting people back to the land. Telling people, hey, we used to have oyster reefs in New York Harbor, and now we don't. And here's the organization that's working on it. You can go volunteer on Saturday this time and be part of it. Like, really connecting people back to the land, because it's right around us. I mean, it's everywhere we look. We're just not interacting with it. So that's kind of our bigger goal beyond just restoring oysters, is connecting people from the ground up.
Cool. Awesome. What are your 3 tips for someone who wants to live a more eco-conscious life?
Well, I think, like, the first thing to do is, I mean, like, you know, I could say compost or whatever, things like that. But I think I would love to see everybody go work on a farm for one week in their life. Or even, you don't even do it for a week. Like, places will take you for an afternoon if you want to do that. But I would recommend, like, a week is a really good time to, like, really feel connected to the land. You know, I feel like we owe it to the planet to go interact with the planet sometimes. Like, we have everything delivered to us. Like, any food we could imagine in the world, we can get pretty instantaneously from, like, an app delivered to our doorstep, and, like, see how things grow and, like, appreciate the work that is done to create food and the beauty that it offers. I don't need to give free tips. I think that's the only tip. Just do that, like, once, and then, like, the rest will come from there. Like, people, like, feel like people will naturally.
Oh, that's great. And tell us where people can kind of connect with you and find you, and maybe where they can purchase your wine.
Yeah, well, if you go to the website, proudpour.com, and there's a link, like, on our website, I think it's like contact us, and it goes directly to my phone. So I think it's like cheers at proudpour. I see it. Brian sees it. Kaylee, who's working with us in Portland, sees it. We're pretty reachable. And then there it also has our website of all our locations. So you can, like, click on current location, and it'll show you the eight closest spots too. And then, like, anywhere that, like, people eat that's eco-friendly or vegan or cares about the environment or serves oysters or, you know, farm to table. Like, it really, what really, really helps is consumers recommending a product to a restaurant. That really helps us out, because it's hard, you know, we're recommending it. They're like, yeah, of course you're recommending it. It's your company, you know, but if somebody else is recommending it, that goes a long way.
Awesome. Amazing. Well, thanks so much, Rylan.
Yeah, thanks, Barbara. It was great talking with you.
If you're interested in drinking a delicious bottle of wine for a cause, check out Proud Pour. There's a map online of where to find their wine. We've linked it in the show notes. This includes restaurants like Freehold in Williamsburg, the Langham Hotel in Boston, and the Portland Wine Bar in Portland, Oregon. And don't forget to tune in again next week. We've got another super special episode to help ring in the new year. And as always, stay green.
Thanks for talking dirty with us. Tune in next week for more Trash Talking with Eco Warriors. For more inspiration, follow us on Instagram @trashybeautyco.